Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
Welcome to Soho Strangler Week by Murdmile. To accompany the series, here's a few extra details from the police files and the court records to aid your enjoyment and maybe even help you crack the case. This episode is about how commonplace the murder of prostitutes is. It's kind of interesting when you look at something like Jack the Ripper. If you didn't know true crime and you looked at the amount of coverage it gets, you would assume that that is the only time in history when prostitutes were murdered. But unfortunately, that's far from true. 37% of those murdered in the United Kingdom are associated with the sex trade. So if you are a prostitute or an escort girl or anything like that, it's highly likely that you will be a victim of murder. But also, because of the clandestine nature of the crime, it's less likely that your murder will ever be solved. So it's unfortunately, it's incredibly common. It's more common than any other member of society, except those who are under the age of one. Unfortunately, they are the category of victim that is the highest. They're more murdered than any other section of society. That wasn't even good English then, but you know what I'm talking about. Second is prostitutes. And it's kind of tragic in a way that, I hate to use the word fallen women, I'm using air quotes around that, but no one seems to care about a murdered prostitute. You can kind of see it with Jack the Ripper, the way these women have been kind of cast aside and all we care about is their name, age, collection of injuries, and they are really just a prop in order to guide us towards the mystery of who this serial killer could be. But it's, in a way, when you look at it, and you can kind of see that with the earlier victims of Jack the Ripper, and you can see that the same with the Soho Strangler as well, with French Fifi, that if her death could have been entirely forgotten about, you can see it in the press, you get a sense of it. They're really not that interested. They're putting across the basic information because that's what they have to do, but they're not really that interested. And that's kind of the tragedy of it, is that if she's murdered, it's almost forgotten, and everyone kind of demonises her and says, well, it's her choice, you know, she decided to become a prostitute, which is entirely incorrect. Whereas, if she's murdered by a serial killer, she becomes immortalised forever. Why? Why is it that we choose to remember some victims but not others? And I think as people who kind of love true crime, it's kind of important for us to admit that we're responsible for this as well, because we make the decision about what goes out on television, what goes out, what is presented in books. Because if you think about it, if you watch something and it's a success, it's a success not because it's great, it's a success because lots of people watch it. A book is a success because lots of people buy it. But if we choose not to buy a certain book, we choose not to watch something on telly, it won't get made again. People will go, that's not going to work, is it? So we are as much responsible for this. So how we digest this information, and the more that we can kind of accept the fact, well, not really accept the fact, the more that we understand the fact that the murder of prostitutes, unfortunately, is all too common. And it's not just related to things like Jack the Ripper, the Blackout Ripper, the Soho Strangler, Yorkshire Ripper, Suffolk Strangler. It's not contained into those little bubbles. Unfortunately, it's very, very regular. So what I'm going to do with this is I'm going to focus on some other murders of prostitutes, mostly focusing in and around London, but to show that even though we had the Soho Strangler, and even though there are connections, the whole point about the series was, are they connected? Are they not connected? Are we just grasping at straws? Are we really just looking for connections? Why? Because that's what we do. We want to solve a mystery. I know that I'm recording this at the moment and only episode 7 has gone out yet. And I know that by the time we get to episode 10, the final episode, people will go, oh, I don't like unsolved things. And it's like, well, life is like that, isn't it? Not everything is neat. Not everything you can put into little boxes. So, unfortunately, with the Soho Strangler case, things just... It didn't wrap up. I've taken it as far as I can, but... the murder of prostitutes, there's so many, and so many of them are unsolved, but it doesn't mean that they're connected. If we look at Blackout Ripper, so we've done the 10-part series on the Blackout Ripper. 4 women murdered, 2 attempted murders in 4 days, horrific mutilation, horrific deaths. I would probably say it was some kind of copycat of Jack the Ripper. He wanted Jack the Ripper's kind of notoriety. Why? Because he was a sad, pathetic man who hadn't really achieved anything. Why do we not know about the Blackout Ripper? Well, we can see a sense of this through the Soho Strangler in the fact that we were in the precursor to war. War's on the horizon. If you know your World War II history, you would think, oh, God, there were certain key moments and that's why the war happened. But unfortunately, a lot of leaders, a lot of generals were spoiling for a fight for at least a decade before. So it was on the horizon. It was going to happen. Soho Strangler was building up to that. That's why the kind of the press and the people weren't really that interested in this exciting story. Jack the Ripper era, not really a lot going on. You've got the birth of tabloid coming through. You've got compulsory education for everyone, including working class people. So you've got new, younger generation coming through who can read. You've got tabloid being created for these working class people, whereas newspapers prior to that were more kind of for the elite. I hate to use the word elite. Let's just say tosspots, for overprivileged tosspots. Whereas, you know, this was kind of for a newer, less literate generation. So you had more headlined. You needed to have grabby headlines. You couldn't have really boring, long columns with, if you read old newspapers, have a look at old newspapers and you'll find there's no headlines. It's all very, very dull, long columns. And I struggle when I do research looking at old newspapers and go, where's the story? Because there's no headlines. It's all just sentences, paragraphs wedged together. Whereas with the birth of tabloid, they started to use headlines, sublines. They would use kind of break sentences in between paragraphs. Like they just say, a Jew, a black man. And you go, oh, interesting. I'm definitely going to read. I'm going to keep reading. That was the whole idea. And they'd have drawings. They'd have photographs. That was Jack the Ripper. That's kind of why Jack the Ripper. It was the right murders for the right moment. It was the birth of tabloid. Blackout Ripper, World War II. We were full into the Blitz. I think one of the reasons why the Blackout Ripper isn't known, because the case was solved. If you listen back to the series, it was a series of 4 murders over 4 days. By the time we got to the Thursday, when he committed his last murder, he was arrested on the Friday. The press only started to piece together things on the Friday, as the police had. So by that point, what can they do? They can't really go, oh, it could be this man, it could be that man. They have a man, he's been arrested. Within less than 3 months, he'd already gone to trial, he'd had his appeal, he'd been executed, job done. And it was wartime, people were moving on. Same with Soho Strangler, it wasn't really the birth, but kind of, we just got the start of television. The BBC had a remit to create TV programmes for, I think it was about a year prior to that. The first routine. The first regular TV programs were just about to start. So TV was in its infancy. Radio was huge. As you've seen with French Marie, detective magazines were kind of all the rage around that moment. If you look at all the films that are out around the time of the 1930s, it's all crime films. People love true crime. So it was massive. It was mass media organizations. Films, there's radio, there's press, there's books, there's everything. Also, by this point, the audience, unlike Jack the Ripper era, where people, let's try and be kind, people were less savvy. I'm not going to say thick. It's just by the 1930s and 40s, and there's a real difference. If you watch films of the 1940s to films now, they're entirely different. They're very simple in the 1930s and 40s, but the audience were far more savvy than they were in the 1880s. So audiences were able to distinguish the difference between when they're being spun a lie or when they're being led down a path that was, it might not be true, but people love to be entertained. So it's interesting which cases involving the murder of prostitutes don't. Let's remember throughout that not all of these women were prostitutes. So I'm just going to say women, but most of these cases are cases involving women, some women who were prostitutes, some who weren't, some who were casual prostitutes as well. So Blackout Ripper, we've got that was a case almost entirely forgotten. John Reginald Christie, 10 Rillington Place. So that's a fascinating story. But again, see, that's infamous today, but it was only really became infamous after the film and after Ludovic Kennedy's book as well. So the problem was the same with the Blackout Ripper. Most of these women weren't reported missing. It only really became famous when the body was found. He went missing and then they arrested him. And that's when it started to become really exciting. So because most of the work was done, the press really couldn't create a myth around it. They couldn't really say, here is a monster. What could he be like? Oh, he's probably got like jutting teeth and crazy eyes and things like that. They got a photograph of him. He was a man who was 5'8", balding, not particularly attractive. You know, case closed. There he is. So they kind of made the most of what they could. Later, moving into the 1960s, so that was 1940s and 50s. Moving into the 1960s, we've got Jack the Stripper. Jack the Stripper is one of those cases that's still unsolved today. One day, because it is in my patch, I am hoping to do Jack the Stripper, but the problem is the original court records and the police files are still held for another 30 years. So I do put in my Freedom of Information request, but it's not gonna happen. So with Jack the Stripper, we have 7 known victims in and around Hammersmith area. They came from Hammersmith, Brentford, Chiswick, Acton, Mortlake, all around the area. All were strangled, all found naked in the River Thames, or most as. That's still unsolved today. Most, as far as we know, were prostitutes as well. So these are all connected, and we know they're connected because we were able to piece together all of the evidence at the time and say that these women were connected. But not all, it's interesting, isn't it? It's with the Soho Strangler, you could say, yes, they're connected because we've got the correlation between how they were murdered. You know, nobody saw the killer go in or out. There was no disturbance of the room. There was no obvious robbery. There was no sexual assault. There was a punch to the face first. There was a strangulation, which didn't appear to be premeditated because he hadn't brought a weapon with him. So he used what was available in the room. And there didn't seem to be any mutilation of the body, with the exception of Dutch Leia, where he got the half kilo flat iron and beat her around the head. Why? It could have been anger, but it could have been that maybe, this is my theory, because he used stockings with the first two, and stockings are very malleable. You can, not that I know this, you can tie them around someone's neck. You can pull it really tight. Nylons really hold their shape really well. They kind of hold the position. You could tie a knot at the end. As with I think it was French Marie. It was a half hitch knot, which basically, when it's tied off, you can hold it with one hand and it holds the tension in the neck. It keeps it tight. So good for suicide, but also good for murder as well. But with Dutch Layer, because it was an electrical flex, and an electrical flex, unfortunately, isn't as flexible, when it was put around her neck, he, could be a she, didn't tie it off. Therefore, it's likely, given the fact that there was mucus in her throat and blood in her throat as well, and she was still breathing and probably wasn't fully unconscious, it's likely that she gained some kind of consciousness, started to scream. He grabbed whatever was near the 1 kilo flat iron. It wasn't hers, but it came with the flat. The landlord had left it there, as he'd left many other things. And that was used to beat her around the head. I believe, possibly she was trying to scream. So I'm just having a swig of Lemsip, because I've got a bit of a cold coming on, as you can probably hear. So with the Soho Strangler murders, they could be connected. They might not be connected. I think that's what I tried to get across in the episode, is not to take everything on face value. Same with Jack the Ripper. We talk about, inverted commas, the canonical five, but everyone who has a theory about Jack the Ripper will say, oh, well, it was this one, and this one, but it wasn't that one. Do you know, they cherry pick. Some people say it was five, some people say it was three victims, some will say it was seven. When I used to do my tours, I used to say, you know, Jack the Ripper, there's 106 current suspects of who could be Jack the Ripper. And he killed anywhere between 3 and 23 different victims. And each week someone would say, oh, I think it was 8. Do you know, they'd always come up with something different. Why? Because you can kind of, with Jack the Ripper, you can cherry pick. Soho Strangler, they could be connected, they might not be connected, but there were other murders around that time. So, in between Dutch Layer and French Marie, so 13th of May 1937, Racina Fields over in Islington Green. So Islington Green is not too far from where French Marie was murdered. It's half a mile, maybe a mile, which is, you know, within walking distance. Racina was strangled to death. She was found in a tin box in the basement of a building. She'd been murdered by a man called Fred Murphy. That would be proven later on. Murphy had before been charged with the murder of a prostitute in Aldgate, whose throat had been cut. That particular case was discontinued after the main witness disappeared. For the murder of Racina Murphy, he was executed at Pentonville. So, given the fact that she was a prostitute in the local area and she had been strangled, was that connected? Was it not? I mean, we've got Dutch Layer. There's differences there with her being beaten around the head. So why is the other victim being having their throat cut? Why is that not connected as well? It could easily be. One of the cases that I'm hoping to bring to Murder Mile soon is on the 22nd of February 1932. Dora Lloyd over in Maida Vale. She was a West End prostitute and she was strangled in her own flat. I'm still trying to get the original court records of that. It's proving a little bit problematic. Moving into the 1940s, I think we still have some more all in the 1940s. Kathleen Higgins, again, this is hopefully coming to Murder Mile soon. Last time I went into the archives, I booked out this file, was very excited, looking forward to piecing it all together. I'd done my research in advance. The file is missing. Really annoying. Kathleen Higgins was found in Winfield House, so that's Regent's Park. So not too far away. Kathleen was found strangled with a scarf. Her knickers lay on the lower part of her legs. There'd been an attempt at sexual intercourse before the attack. Kathleen could only be identified 3 days after she was found. Let's also not forget, if you go back to episodes 8 and 9, Rachel Annie Fenwick, alias Ginger Ray, at 46 Broadwick Street. That was 26th of September 1948. So, late 1940s. And interestingly, with Ginger Ray, with Dora Friedman, who we're going to mention shortly, and Rita Green, and Margaret Cook as well, who we covered as well. I was going to put this into the Soho Strangler case, and originally anyone who came on my really, really, really early Murder Mile walks back in 2015, 2016, the original early ones, because that's where I pieced together all of the early part of the Soho Strangler information that went on the tour, that was in there. But originally, in the late 1940s, the press started to make a connection between another series of murders of prostitutes in and around the Soho area. And they said, oh, the Soho Strangler returns. Oh, it's really exciting. So Ginger Ray was there. That's 26th of September 1948. Dora Friedman, Russian Dora. Her file is still held. Myself and a member of her family have been piecing together bits and pieces over the years, so I'm building a file, but there's not enough for an episode. She was murdered 5th of September 1948, so 3 weeks earlier. Rita Green, also known as Black Rita, at 42 Rupert Street, so that's just south of Archer Street, where French Fifi was murdered. That was the 8th of September 1947, just a year earlier. And then a year before that, Margaret Cook on Carnaby Street, which we covered, I think that's episode 13. So the press said that these four murders were all connected. And unfortunately, they said, this is the return of the Soho Strangler. And oh, it's meant to be really exciting. Problem is, Ginger Ray was stabbed to death. Russian Dora was stabbed to death as well, with a carving knife. Rita Green was shot in the stomach. Some people believe that she was a police informer. Margaret Cook, again, she was shot. So not really a Soho Strangler, really, is it? Which is why the story failed. There wasn't really a hell of a lot going on. War was over. People were trying to get their lives back together. There was still rationing going on. People wanted a bit of a distraction. But also by this point, people weren't that interested in murder anymore. Murder, and sorry if my blowy nose annoys people. Interest in true crime only really seems to happen when we're at a relative area of peace in the world, when we kind of need distractions from our everyday dull life. Whereas when you've World War II, when you've got death on your doorstep surrounding you day and night, you don't want to come home and read about true crime. I know right now someone is going, I would. You wouldn't. Because why? Because we're living in a time at the moment, fingers crossed, of relative peace. But if war were to come, as in World War II, as with the Blitz, where every day you don't know whether you're going to leave your front door and get blown to pieces, you don't want to know about death and murder. But when you're living in a period of freedom, fantastic. Do you know, we can absorb all of this gory, gory true crime. Why? Because it's escapism. But there's nothing escapist about waking up in the morning and looking at your neighbour's house and it's been blown to bits and you can see their body parts scattered in the back garden. So, yeah. Russian Dora murdered on Long Acre over in Covent Garden. I'm hoping to come and do this at some point. Dora was stabbed to death. She was found partially clothed, lying on the floor with a carving knife in her heart and an electrical flex around her neck that had been pleated. Police also found a fingerprint on the knife. I'm really hoping to get to this episode. Another one. Unfortunately, this is another case that's held. It's, when was that? Almost 85 years ago was Rita Green, Black Rita, on 42 Rupert Street. Rita was shot in the stomach and chest and was found in her flat. She was fully dressed. She died at Charing Cross Hospital. There are many theories as to her death, whether she was a police informer, or there are links between her and the Messina brothers. And this, again, was going to go into the Soho Strangler case. I know your brains are probably fried from the Soho Strangler case because it's a complicated case. And there was a lots of red herrings and loose ends and threads throughout the series that are kind of quite exciting. I actually took out big pieces about the Messina brothers and the Vassallo gang. And the Messina brothers and the Vassallo gang were Maltese gangs who actually took over from the French gang. So the 1930s, 1920s, 1930s, basically prostitution was ran by the French gangs. By the mid-1930s, you got the Maltese factions who are turning up. They're quite bloody and ruthless. They're pretty much fighting and getting the French gangs out. So people like Red Max, people like Roggeveen, they were on their last legs. Yeah, the Maltese gangs were coming in. You may think this is an old thing and it's like, oh, well, that's how it used to be. Unfortunately not. It's now the Albanian gangs who run the prostitution rackets. It's fascinating when you live and work in and around Soho because you don't read a lot about it in the press. It's almost like it doesn't exist. But everyone in Soho knows they're there, and you see these black Mercedes, fleets of black Mercedes, kind of 4x4s racing through the city. They go right through the traffic lights. They don't give a crap. It's the Albanian gangs, and there's nothing you can do about them. It's kind of too powerful, unfortunately, or in the pocket of someone who knows. I think it's more likely that, isn't it? So we got Margaret Cook as well. 10th of November 1946, she was shot. We did that episode about the guy who claimed that he'd murdered her. I think it's unlikely that he did murder her. We've had no update on that. That has been almost 5 years now. He had terminal cancer. By that point, he was in his late 80s, I believe. So he may not be alive anymore. Unfortunately, the police file is no longer available. It's been pushed back because of the potential court case that would have happened. December 13th, 1944, Evelyn Hatton over on Duke Street in Mayfair. She was a prostitute in and around Piccadilly. She was strangled to death. Her flat door was locked and she was found inside lying on her bed, fully dressed in her outdoor clothes. She had a kind of a silk scarf knotted and tied around her throat, and her feet had been bound together with a sheet from her bed. Her handbag had been rifled. I'm still desperate to get this case done. This is one of the ones that I'm really interested in. Unfortunately, it's a bit of a problematic one because the judge involved in the case made a couple of changes that are slightly controversial. Therefore, the file itself almost... I'd love to know more about what it is. One day I will get to it. One day I will get that file and then I'll be able to tell you all about it. But I'm struggling with that one at the moment. 29th. Don't forget, this is not all the prostitutes who've been murdered. This is just a small sample that we've got in and around the kind of the era. And me saying, why aren't they connected? 29th of July 1942, Mary McLeod over on Fleur-de-Lys Street in Stepney, East London. She was strangled to death, found lying in her bed, covered in an eiderdown, only her face being exposed. There were bloodstains on the pillow, and there were signs of a boot or a shoe had skidded through the blood on the way out. A gentleman called Thomas Bragg was charged with her murder but found not guilty on the trial judge's orders. Interesting, we already have a murderer in Murder Mile called Thomas Bragg. 19th of May 1942, Jean Stafford over in Bedford Place in Holborn. Now, she wasn't a sex worker, but she was strangled to death with her own summer dress. Her jaw had been broken and she'd been left naked on her bed except for her bra. When the police searched the room, they found there was no money and thought that robbery might be a motive. See, that's similar to the Soho Strangler case. You've got a punch to the face, the jaw, to make them unconscious. The lady has been strangled using something of her own, and then no money is found. Although, as mentioned in the episode, how do you prove if a robbery has taken place? Do you know, if someone looked at my wallet now, they go, oh my God, he's been robbed, there's no money in it. I haven't carried money, like actual paper coin money, since first lockdown. And someone may go, oh my God, they've taken all his credit cards. But I don't own credit cards. I only own one debit card. That's all I own. I don't have loyalty cards. So my wallet is empty, pretty much. So it may look like I've been robbed, but I haven't been robbed. It's just that's how I live my life. So it's kind of fascinating in a way. into the 1950s, when I was doing a search for kind of more of the Soho Strangler, like I did searches through all the newspapers, search for Soho Strangler, and came up with 1st of October 1952 in the Daily Herald, a Soho Strangler who left fingerprints was being hunted by Scotland Yard last night. He murdered, here we go again, an attractive blonde. Well, she's attractive, therefore that's the reason why she was murdered. He murdered an attractive blonde in a flat in Charlotte Street, Soho. Now, did you notice something that's wrong there? For purists, we will say Charlotte Street isn't in Soho, it's in Fitzrovia. Fitzrovia, you got Soho, then you cross over Oxford Street, and then you go north, that's Fitzrovia. They're two very distinct places. But as you can see, what they try and do is, because no one really knows Fitzrovia. It's like if you were to say to anyone in Scotland or Canada or whatever, she was murdered in Fitzrovia, they'd go, where? Whereas if you say Soho, instantly you're thinking prostitutes, you're thinking red light district, you're thinking crime, corruption, gangsters. Do you know, it's all there, isn't it? It's all very exciting. So, this lady, she had been strangled with her own pyjama cord and then been a heavy blow to the back of the head. Postmortem showed that the killing had taken place just a couple of nights before. As predicted in the newspapers, it said, last night, two coloured men were being taken in for questioning. It was the early 1950s. It's the start of the Windrush. It's the start of what would become the race riots as well. So, as mentioned in Murder Mile, when we talk about villains of the day, when you look at the kind of villains in the press, you can kind of see if you go mid 1850s, you kind of got the Welsh. Sorry for the Welsh people, but the Welsh people coming into Britain, coming into England, taking English jobs. It's like, oh, the Welsh, right? And then the Irish come in kind of the late 1800s, and the Welsh are going, oh, that's disgraceful. So are the British, because the Irish are here. And then when you get to the 50s, it's Windrush, and then so that's the new villain. And as I mentioned, 1930s is a kind of everyone going, oh, the Jews, although everyone seems to blame the Jews for everything since time immemorial. 1970s, you've got people going, oh, boo, the Asians. And then 1990s, you go, ah, boo, the Eastern Europeans. And now we've now the Eastern Europeans are going, yeah, boo, the Somalis. Do you know, everybody has villains of their own era. So, 1950s, it was very much, inverted commas, oh, a black man, or as I'd say, a coloured man. Now, even with this article as well, so the Daily News, this was titled The Pyjama Cord Murder. I am hoping to cover this case at some point in Murder Mile. Again, unfortunately, this is one of those files that every time I keep trying to get it out of the archives, it is redacted to hell. It's like, it's not like I can just look at a couple of pages and go, oh, they've taken a couple of lines out of it. This is the whole file is not there. It keeps being put back. But 1st of October 1952, the pyjama cord murder. You see the press are trying to make something out of it. If you tag a line to it, the Soho murders, the Soho Strangler murders, the Whitechapel murders, Jack the Ripper. This they tried with the pyjama cord murder. You need a kind of a quick line that kind of gets people's memories to go, ah, yes, pyjama cord murder. Underneath all the information, at the bottom of the page, they said five mysteries. Five murders in the Soho area since 1946 with a woman, the victim in each case, are unsolved. They are Mrs. Francis Mizzi, a 26-year-old strangled in her flat. That was Wardour Street. Mrs. Margaret Cook, a prostitute aged 25, shot in a passage. That was Carnaby Street. Mrs. Rita Barrett, Black Rita, a prostitute aged 30, shot in a staircase. Mrs. Helen Friedman, Russian Dora, a prostitute aged 50, stabbed in her flat. Mrs. Rachel Fenwick, Ginger Ray, prostitute aged 41, stabbed in her flat. So, even though the press aren't saying these are definitely connected, by saying these are all the other murders that you've don't know about, instantly, because we're an audience, we go, I wonder if they're connected. Why? Because we want to make connections. It might not be one killer, it might be multiple killers. As we know, I think, off the top of my head, Frances Mizzi was murdered by her boyfriend, who was a seaman, as in a sailor, not as in something that swims around in a man's testicles. Although you never know. Mrs. Margaret Cook is still unsolved. It was believed to be one of her punters. Allegedly was meant to be that man in Canada. We don't know whether it was. Rita Barrett. There was meant to be a sighting of a man with an attaché case and a hat who was seen, although we don't know who he was. So that... Ooh, rain's really coming down now. So we don't know who that was. Russian Dora, still unsolved. And Rachel Fenwick. Again, if you listen to that episode, I managed to pin it down to... Hope you can hear me over the rain. I managed to pin it down to two people. One was a Maltese pimp. Unlikely it was him. The other one was a civil servant who was knighted by the king 2 years later. And therefore, he was found that night, two streets away, drunk, couldn't remember where he was. His face was covered in blood. He had key marks in his face. And everyone always said that whenever Ginger Ray would get attacked, like most prostitutes, she was attacked regularly. So she knew how to handle herself. But she also was smart enough to know that... because the police would dismiss her and say, well, you know, you shouldn't be out. You shouldn't be out tonight. You shouldn't be prostituting. And would dismiss her information. She would find a way to make sure that she could identify the man. Therefore, she'd have her keys with her and she'd scratch at his face. He had those same marks. He was found in bed with a prostitute in Kilburn later that night, although he denied it. The police interviewed him, and because he was a civil servant and a very respected and wealthy man who 2 years later would be knighted, they said, a direct quote, I don't know why it's still in my head, he was a man of good character, and they let him go. Utterly baffling, utterly baffling. So, yeah. Oh, so, I mean, this is just a snapshot of prostitute murders in and around the Soho area, pre the Soho Strangler murders, post the Soho Strangler murders. There's lots, and most of these haven't even been covered in Murder Mile yet. Even today, I was covering a case of Polish Joe. Polish Joe, which will be coming to Murder Mile soon as a two-parter. Interesting case. I'm not going to give away too much, but again, murder of a prostitute in and around the local area. They haven't connected it to other prostitute murders. Could be connected, might not be connected. Most likely isn't connected. But this is the thing. Why do we connect them? Why do we feel that we have to connect them? Why is it that we only remember certain prostitutes if they're connected to a famous murderer? But everyone else, fuck them. Fuck them, we don't care. We don't care about their name. We don't care about their injuries. It's their life is not worth us remembering. No one's going to write books about them. But if they're connected to someone famous, suddenly we have to remember them. It's kind of tragic in a way. And I know that people will go, well, the reason why we're interested in the serial killer is we want to bring kind of justice to the victims' lives. But that's not how you do it. The way you bring justice to the victims' lives is by researching their lives properly, telling their life story in full, with compassion, and as truthfully as possible, dismissing the serial killer and just going, look, he's clearly a coward. He's clearly an arsehole. We don't need to care about him. But no one's going to do that. Why? Because people want excitement. They want serial killers. It's exciting. You don't want to believe that a serial killer is... Oh, you don't want to believe that it's four independent murders by a series of dull, tragic men who are complete cowards who have attacked a woman because... they wanted to have sex with her, they hadn't got enough money, and therefore they're upset and drunk and felt that that was their only way out. That's most likely to be the truth of it, and that's most likely, unfortunately, why a lot of prostitutes get murdered through drunkenness and arrogance, and also by their pimps as well. So it's one of those tragic stories that will keep going on for as long as there is prostitution, and pretty tragic. So, the only way through it is to ditch the myths, stop creating monsters, and treat the victims with respect. If you enjoyed that, there's more to come. Your regular episodes of Murder Mile will return on Thursday the 27th of April, or a few days earlier via Patreon.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.